So I didn't change the title here to remind you that I'm not completely changing the title of my talk or the topic of my talk, but I decided to add to the liquid crystals in the something a little bit about mixtures in solution, because inspired by some other talks where some interesting discussions came up after the other talks, and I thought I might comment on a few aspects there. So it's in general about transferability, and I really love it when a plan comes together, because I have been relying on the fact that Will was speaking before me and I wouldn't have to introduce all the notation. I shamelessly stole notation from one of his papers and it has worked. So we have a mapping scheme, and you will not have to change notation. It's the same that Will has been using. And I'm briefly rushing through the systematic coarse-graining stuff because you've heard it by now, I think. A possible aim of systematic coarse-graining would be a consistent sampling of phase space on the atomistic and coarse-grained level, and basically that you can define the aim of coarse-graining by mapping your configuration of probability distribution function to the coarse-grained coordinates in the way Will has done it before. And the consistency criterion that you might want to define in that case is that your coarse-grained ensemble should sample the same probability distribution function. The theoretical solution we've also heard before would be for this multidimensional potential, would be that multidimensional potential of mean force coming out of this inversion. And as we've also heard, otherwise all these approaches that we are using wouldn't be there. That doesn't work. That's not feasible to use directly a multidimensional potential of mean force in your simulation for various reasons. And now you come up with various approaches to approximate that. And that's basically where all the structure-based coarse-graining methods chip in. So we've heard in Will's talk about the choice of interactions that you actually want to use in your coarse-grained simulation. So typically pair potentials, bonds, angles, torsions, maybe three-body potentials, even though that's not very often used. And then you have to choose basically your parametrization route that's tightly coupled also to your parametrization target. So you could limit yourself to pair correlation functions, so pair PMFs out of those expansion of your multi-dimensional potential of mean force. Then you would arrive at what we've also heard now several times, the Henderson solution. So we've heard there is, in principle, exactly one solution that gives you the effective pair for a pair potential that you have to use to satisfy the pair correlation function of the system. You might have the mean forces or the multidimensional potential of mean force as a target, and you arrive at force matching. We have heard about the relative entropy method, and we've also heard that all of them are interrelated and under certain conditions give you the same result. I have singled out here a little bit routes relying on thermodynamic cycles, not because they are different, but because they emphasize slightly differently. And let me explain what I mean there. So you might have a system where not all your components are equally in terms of concentration. So you might have one component at low concentration, which I will from now on call solute. And there you might have the problem that you don't want to actually sample a pair distribution function for that solute, but you might want to calculate explicitly with thermodynamic integrations or umbrella sampling the PMF associated with that particular pair PMF. And in this case, for example, IBI wouldn't be a good choice so iterative Boltzmann inversion wouldn't be a good choice of doing a structure-based approach to that. So in that case, we came up with a way of approximating the IBI or the IMC solution, and you can view that as a sort of thermodynamic cycle approach. So what do we have? So we have a low solute concentration. Let's suppose we have already a coarse-grained model for the solvent-solvent interaction and the solute-solvent interaction. So suppose you have benzene and water, a system, two benzenes, the rest is water. And suppose you already have some route to an interaction for coarse-grained water interaction and coarse-grained benzene water interaction. And there, I at the moment don't make any assumptions how we've gone there. So you could have gotten these from iterative Boltzmann inversion, then it would be strictly the traditional structure-based approach. You could also have gotten those from force matching. Anyway, so that you take as a given. So that would be here the green potential and the red potential. Then you have your target for the missing piece of interaction in your system. That would be the benzene-benzene interaction. And the target for that would be the solute-solute pair potential of mean force that you might have computed explicitly with thermodynamic integration or umbrella sampling, because free sampling in solution would be stupid, actually. Oh, boring, put it like this. And now you say, okay, let's remove explicitly the environment contribution from that PMF with a little trick. So we take our target PMF, the atomistic one. We compute a coarse grain simulation with those potentials that we have already. So suppose you have two benzene molecules in a coarse grain simulation. Those two benzene molecules are swimming in coarse grained water and interacting with that coarse grained water with the coarse grained interaction that you have already determined otherwise. With that, you compute a pair potential of mean force, but these two benzenes aren't interacting with each other. So you're basically pulling together two hollow benzenes, which look to the environment as if they are coarse grained benzenes. And this is the coarse grained PMF with the direct benzene-benzene interaction switched off. So that's essentially a computing the environment contribution to the pair potential of mean force. And if you subtract that from the atomistic PMF, you basically get the missing interaction that completes the picture. You can even show that if you do that for, not for benzene in water, but for two singled out benzene, otherwise in benzene, you recover the IBI solution if the benzene-benzene interactions are IBI benzene. But I'm just mentioning this because it's, in that sense, a little bit special because it puts a strong emphasis on the solute-solute association strength, because this is the last thing that you parameterize in, so to say. So you decide on the solvent-solvent interaction, you decide on the solute-solvent interaction, and now you, by construction, construct a solute-solute interaction which satisfies the solute-solute association strength. And if you've made errors in the rest, all those errors will still be there, but you make sure that the effective benzene-benzene attraction corresponds to your reference, if you decide that this is something that's relevant to you. And I just wanted to mention this because it basically doesn't do anything special compared to the other methods. It's just singling out a component in the system for which you have a statistical problem, and for which you might want to decide, if you think about hydrophobic effects, that this particular interaction is for you particularly important. And with that, I want to stop the introduction and move to the few things I wanted to say about transferability. So luckily, Peter Gumsch has already introduced the challenges of transferability and representability, so I don't have to explain that again. What I wanted to say, that's also related. So just to illustrate the problem of representability, suppose you have, this is now not a solute-solvent system, this is pure butane, the system we are looking at here. So these are two butane molecules in coarse-grained butane, and for a totally different project, unrelated, we've used all the methods that we had at hand to calculate the butane-butane potential in pure butane. And here you see a zoo of potentials. This zoo of potentials, they all look pretty different, right? I mean, you have the typical iterative Boltzmann inversion solution with two minima. The force matching solution also has two minima there, but they look different. The total association strength is different. We have one that only has one minimum. This is coming from one of those thermodynamic cycle thingies I'm not going to explain about too much. And then we also, for comparison, take the standard Martini for those that are familiar with that. And if you just simulate pure butane with that, you actually get this solution here. So the dashed line is the atomistic reference pair correlation function in that system. Well, Martini stands out a bit because Martini actually has standard Lennard-Jones. It's just too repulsive. That's why it's so singled out and overstructured. But all the other ones give you what you would call a decent fit to the structure. I mean, we know there is the one Henderson pair potential, and obviously only one out of those, maybe none of those, is the true Henderson solution. But what that also tells you is that within an error that to the eye looks reasonable, they actually all give very similar structure, but these potentials look very different. Now, if I now factor in that my original pair correlation function that I have as a target might actually have an error. I mean, okay, in pure benzene, you can do that as accurately as you wish, but if you have a more complex system, there is actually an error in the GFR. Then you see that it's not so easy to decide which is actually a good approximation to the Henderson solution. And that then relates to the question of representability in a way. If you now go ahead and calculate some other property with all those different interaction functions, you get, for example, for the free energy of inserting yet another butane into a sea of that butane, you get rather different insertion free energies, which means that this is at the same time a curse, but it's also, there's potential in there, because if you say, okay, well, actually, maybe you don't even care how accurately, I mean, if your structure is spot on reproduced, but that tells you that within actually rather a zoo of different potentials, you can get a decent structure picture, if you want to view it as structure picture, and you have access to actually quite a large number of thermodynamic behavior. And okay, for butane, I mean, this is really now a dumb example, but if it's already like this for butane, I mean, picture what happens if you have a multi-component system. So this is what I wanted to say about generally the Henderson solution and what we found even for simple systems with the various approaches. And now I wanted to say a few things about concentration transferability, and then I will actually do the something. Concentration transferability. I will, in parallel, so to say, follow through to two examples. One is a hydrophobic in water example, so where we look at hydrophobic molecules in aqueous solution, where we also have an explicit coarse-grained water model. The other example we follow through in parallel deals with electrolytes, and in this case we have an implicit solvent representation. But I want you to see some parallels there. So for the hydrophobic example, we've been looking at the benzene-benzene pair potential of mean force in water, so the example which I before already used to explain this subtraction trick. And we've looked at how these benzene water mixtures behave. So first you can do the most simple thing. You look at the pair potential of mean force obtained with such a benzene-benzene interaction, which was parametrized for two benzenes in water. And you can just simulate with that liquid benzene. It actually gives a decent, relatively decent representation of liquid benzene structure-wise. If you now reverse that, and you look at an aqueous benzene solution, and you look at the pair potential of mean force, by construction, our CG dilute, as I call it, so the one that was parametrized on two benzenes in water, reproduces the atomistic pair potential of mean force of benzene in water. That's how we have made it. If we compare that to a coarse-grained model that was parametrized on bulk benzene, that fails miserably because no hydrophobicity has been parametrized into there, so it's not so surprising. So that's my example one, and I will follow up on that example. Just memorize for the moment. So we have CG dilute is a coarse-grained model for benzene in water, parametrized on a highly dilute benzene in water system. The other example is an ion-ion interaction that we've parametrized on, again, the pair potential of mean force. For example, here a sodium and a chloride ion in water. Since we are dealing with an implicit solvent model, we can basically use the PMF right away as an interaction function because we have no coarse-grained water, so we don't have to. So everything from the PMF goes into the coarse-grained interaction. What we do here is basically we split up this potential of mean force into a short-range ion-specific part and a transferable electrostatic part, but that doesn't need to bother you for the moment. So both models reproduce by construction the association strengths in water, and by construction they reproduce the pair structure at infinite dilution. And I will show you that they will also work over a range of concentrations. So they are to some extent concentration transferable. And to illustrate how we can view that better, I'll come back to what Christoph has been introducing, the Kirkwood-Buff analysis. So an analysis of the structure of a solution that links the solution structure with its thermodynamics. So what is the Kirkwood-Buff integral? Christoph has already had it in his talk. It's basically an integral over the radial distribution function, for example, benzene-benzene, minus 1 times 4 pi r squared. So that's the Kirkwood-Buff integral. What does the Kirkwood-Buff integral physically mean? If you multiply it with the concentration, it basically gives you the axis coordination number. That means if you, for example, compute the Kirkwood-Buff integral of benzene in water, suppose that the orange ones are benzenes and the yellow ones are water, then the Kirkwood-Buff integral tells you how much more benzene, for example, you find close to a singled out benzene compared to the solution concentration. And from, if you now have a mixture, so you have a component benzene, a component water, and a Kirkwood-Buff integral also for benzene water, by adding them all up, you get a preferential solvation parameter. And that preferential solvation parameter can be directly linked to thermodynamic properties, more precisely to derivative of thermodynamic properties, for example, to the derivative of the chemical potential, in this case of benzene in water, or to the activity coefficient. And this we've done for our benzene water simulation, maybe. There we go. And again, we compare models. So the green model is the model that was parametrized on infinite diluted benzene in water, and the red one for comparison, that was the bulk benzene model. And you will see, well, the chemical potential doesn't show you much, but the activity coefficient does. So what you see on the x-axis is the benzene concentration, and you see the black dots are the atomistic reference data, and the green triangles follow the black dots. That means that the behavior of the activity coefficient with a change of concentration in the coarse grain dilute model mirrors the atomistic behavior, while the coarse grain bulk model fails. And that tells you that this coarse grain dilute model was actually nicely concentration transferable up to demixing. At demixing, all hell breaks loose, it doesn't work. And you can even use this now to intuitively understand why this is so. Because you've basically put the hydrophobic association into the benzene-benzene interaction, and as long as you're not having a big blob of hydrophobic, a big hydrophobic region, so to say, hydrophobic association is pairwise additive. So that's why it's concentration transferable. I mean, once you basically want to demix, this doesn't work anymore. So that was Kirkwood-Buff integrals the first. Now let's also look at our implicit solvent electrolyte. So I remind you again, so this pair PMF between sodium and chloride is now our coarse grain interaction between sodium and chloride ions in implicit water. And now we've made that concentration transferable, and that it actually is concentration transferable. Oh, you can't see that here, that's only one concentration. I apologize. So you have to believe me. So here, you can't see, there is a black curve, which is the atomistic reference, and there is a couple of colored curves, which are all falling on top of each other, a red, a blue, and a green one. And the red and the blue and the blue and the green one, they all are generated from different coarse grain models that have been determined from the PMF. Here, just taking the error of your PMF. So you basically do a worst case scenario. You generate a bundle of possible interactions within the error of your potential of mean force. Now, okay, structure-wise, that all looks fine. They all give you the same pair structure, or, well, to the eye, very similar pair structure, I should say. Now you could, with that simulation, calculate the osmotic coefficient. So here the black curve is the atomistic reference, and now we have these three colors, so green, red, and blue, and you see that in the osmotic behavior, they quite substantially differ. And now you will have to decide which one is actually good, and can we do that based on the structure? Yes, we can, if we look at Kirkwood-Buff integrals. So let me remind you again, this was the computation of the Kirkwood-Buff integral. So we take those g of r's and evaluate that integral, and we look at it and compare to the atomistic one. And here for two concentrations, the black curve is the atomistic Kb integral, and the green and the red and the blue are the ones from our bundle within the error. So you see the blue one is closest to the atomistic KB integral. That means the blue one is actually the one that if you evaluate the pair structure not as a pair g of r, but by integrating it up, is the one that agrees best with the atomistic structure. And it also gives you the best osmotic behavior. It's logical because the osmotic coefficient is by construction linked to the Kirkwood-Buff integral. This is not surprising. I'm telling you nothing really new. What I'm telling you is that by looking at the structure differently, you could have evaluated those potentials better. And now the blue one is actually the one that gave you also the best osmotic behavior. As I said, that's not totally surprising. So what I've shown you here is two examples where Kirkwood-Buff analysis was useful to understand the concentration, well, the concentration transferability I haven't shown for that case, only for that case, but it was useful to understand and to evaluate the quality of your coarse-grained model, and work I was not involved in by Nico van der Vecht, with whom I have been collaborating on these projects. He has extended that to even improve coarse-grained models, to put that into the parametrization, and that was the work that Christoph Junghans has shown before. So with that, I want to conclude on the concentration transferability and move on to the something-something, transferability across a liquid crystalline phase transition. So how much time do I still have? 5 minutes? Okay, so I have to rush this a bit. So the system we are looking at is a liquid crystalline system that can undergo a where the center is an azobenzene group that can undergo a photo switch from trans to cis. Under that photo switching, it changes its shape, and then it undergoes, that induces a photo-induced liquid crystalline phase transition. And in a collaboration with a group that is focusing on the quantum and quantum MM part, we are actually trying to tackle this this problem where really scales are linked from the quantum to the coarse grain scale. And I'm not going to talk about the relationship between the QM, QM, MM, and the classical atomistic part, but I'm going to focus on how to make a coarse-grained model for such a system and set of problems. And basically, what we need our coarse-grained model to be able to capture is both the liquid crystalline state of the trans 8AB8, but also the behavior of a cis-trans mixture, which undergoes then an order-disorder phase transition if you only increase the amount of cis. So this is basically what we're going to look at, because we want to look at that also then feeding back later to the QM-MM people that then are interested in the influence of the environment on the QM-MM photo transition. So the aim is to construct a coarse-grained model that is able to reproduce the structure of the ordered state, but it's also supposed to reproduce the phase transition. And then, therefore, we say, okay, let's first, because we don't know anything about the photo-induced phase transition, let's reproduce the thermotropic one. And it should be fairly faithful as far as the atomistic structure goes, because that we need to go back and forth between atomistic and coarse-grained if you want to hand down structures to the quantum people. So we first had to settle on a target state point. So our target state point, if you look here, so we've done some atomistic simulation, fairly extensive of that system. And at first it undergoes a tilted smectic phase, and then in that force field, that atomistic force field, then we have a non-tilted smectic A phase at 460 Kelvin, and at 480 Kelvin in that finite size atomistic system, it undergoes a thermotropic phase transition to isotropic. So this is basically the region that we want to reproduce. So our model should be able to reproduce this liquid crystalline structure, but it also should be reproducing the order-disorder thermotropic phase transition. So we need to find a suitable reference state for that. And basically, we have various choices. So as I said, we have at 460 Kelvin in the atomistic reference simulations a smectic A state. We have at 480 Kelvin a disordered state. We want to reproduce that transition, and we want to faithfully reproduce the structure over here. So what have we done? We've looked at the supercooled fluid at 460. And we were lucky in that case, because that supercooled fluid is overall isotropic. but at the same time, it retains residual pneumatic order. Let me show you here. So this is again our supercooled fluid. We've actually checked it is truly supercooled. It doesn't gradually undergo an order transition or so. It's truly supercooled that we have, as far as we can do that with atomistic simulations, checked. If we analyze the structure, for example, looking at this order parameter, which is basically looking at the relative order of two molecules as a function of their separation, so it is sensitive to local order. We've analyzed this supercooled fluid, which gives you here this red curve. For comparison, the black curve is what you would get in a fully ordered system, so then you have long-range order, so it doesn't decay to zero. And in the 480, so in the above the phase transition, it looks the local order looks very similar, it's just less. So this fluid, this supercooled fluid, we've used as parametrization target. Why did we do that? Well, because we thought, well, we needed an isotropic reference system, because if you have overall ordered reference system for your coarse graining, then you have basically very long-range potential where all this order is put into the structure-based potentials. That doesn't do well. The residual order was necessary to be able to get the transition to the Schmechtig state, and we can show that that works. So if we 5 minutes left, okay, good. So if we simulate the under the conditions where we know in the atomistic system this is supposed to be Schmechtig, we get a structure that reproduces very faithfully the atomistic structure of the Schmechtig system. So this would be, for example, you can see that here. You would always have to look at the green model. So this is the one that we finally settled on. There is a little bit of IBI magic involved that I'm not going to discuss in details. If you look at the order parameter in that simulation, you would have to compare now blue and green. So also the pneumatic order parameter agrees rather well. If you go back and forth between atomistic simulation, coarse grained with that model, and then back map back to atomistic, also the pneumatic order parameter stays very stable. So we're talking here about a scale from 0.6 to 1. So this is actually really fairly stable. What we also looked at is the so if you picture a system that has four Schmechtig layers, and you look at how the distribution of the centers of your molecules in those four Schmechtig layers is, then you can see that this here is the distribution, the atomistic reference simulation. The coarse grained model is slightly overstructured, but after back mapping, you go back very, very quickly to the structuring of the atomistic one. So the coarse grained model reproduces the liquid crystalline structure. It also reproduces the phase transition. So if you start out with a disordered system and cool it, admittedly, you have to cool below 460. You have to cool it down to 440 Kelvin. Then it spontaneously forms a Schmechtig phase. Don't get yourself irritated. Of course, it doesn't select necessarily exactly ordering parallel to your box. Why should it? I mean, that's only if you set it up like this. Let me first mention it also melts. So if you heat it a bit up, beyond 480, you have to go to 500 Kelvin. Also, the coarse grain model is also going to melt. So with this, we said, OK, with this, we have to analyze the behavior of that coarse grain model a bit further. So we've characterized, currently in the process of characterizing the phase behavior more accurately. We are looking at the dynamics in the coarse grain model, at the growth of liquid crystalline domains, and the photo-induced transition. Let me show you that the structure of this spontaneous phase is very similar to the structure of the atomistic systems where we had parametrized with. So for example, the layer spacing, so these curves indicate the typical layer spacing. The red curve is the atomistic reference simulations which had been set up Schmechtig, and the green curve is referring to the layer spacing in the spontaneously formed Schmechtig phase, which was actually not following your box aspect ratio, so that agreement is very good. We've also looked at the density change upon phase transition. So this is in that sense remarkable, since it's quite reasonable. It's below 1% density change from Schmechtig to isotropic. And that's comparable to typical low molecular weight liquid crystals, while typical hard rod models have a density, an unrealistic density change of 10%. We've also looked at the, one more minute. So I will skip like a gazillion of slides. This molecule, when it, from going from smectic to isotropic, look at the other way around, going from isotropic to smectic, it's stretching, and the coarse-grained model follows here very faithfully the atomistic behavior. Yeah, the dynamics bit. Let me quickly just say, the time scaling in plane and out of plane, you already get with a dumb time scaling factor, you get different time scaling factors, so that's the first thing. So that's something to pay attention to. If you now look a little bit closer, what happens when the molecules diffuse along this, from layer to layer, so they actually hop from layer to layer. You can analyze that dynamically, this hopping motion, and there you can see that the hopping motion happens very similarly in the coarse-grained and atomistic model. That means that these curves here are very similar. Now you could come up with time scaling factors for those. Now you could put cis molecules in there. I won't talk about this. I want to mention the cis molecules, if we do that, so we put a certain number of cis molecules into that system, they are fast in the atomistic reference simulation compared to the standard trans molecules. So this is a challenge for coarse graining. So I can conclude with a question. How do I deal with the danger that different speed-up factors in my system exist? For example, we've seen we have different diffusion in the layer and perpendicular to the layer. We know already cis molecules in the atomistic reference are fast. So what's going to happen if I'm now switching some of those to cis? So I'm generating an out-of-equilibrium situation. I have different time-scaling factors for different dynamic processes. And I'm basically putting by having distorted kinetics and distorted pathways, I'm selecting possibly even different results. So this is basically following up on some discussion that has been in some of the previous talks. So it's not trivial that some of the different processes have different time scaling factors. And if you want to go to complex scenarios like this here, this might actually distort your result. And with that, I want to really just only acknowledge people, and then I shut up. So people done the work. Alessandra Villa and Jiawei Shen are the ones that have done the work on the concentration transferability. Biswarup is the postdoc who does the liquid crystalline system. And this whole thing is a lot of collaboration. So I'm very happy to do these projects in the group of Kurt at the MPIP. I'm very happy to collaborate with Nico, who is now at TU Darmstadt. And all the other people just read their names. And of course, I have to be very grateful to people making code and giving us money. And thanks for your attention. Please ask something about the slides I couldn't show.
Could you please elaborate a little bit about how you go back from cross-grain to atomistic in the liquid crystal side of it?
Yeah. So what we do there is that we generate atomistic, basically random atomistic configurations that satisfy a given coarse-grain structure and multiple of those. And for each of those, we do a short MD simulation on the atomistic level where we put additional restraints that satisfy the coarse-grain structure. So we basically equilibrate an atomistic system around the coarse-grain structure. Restraints, I should actually put. So basically, it's restraining potentials that are harmonic, that act on the center of mass of a given set of atoms, which are the ones that correspond to the mapping scheme. So suppose you have a benzene ring, so you generate a random configuration of that benzene ring, which has its center of mass where the coarse-grain site is, and then you run an atomistic simulation where, with a normal atomistic force field and the additional harmonic restraining potentials that keeps it sitting on the coarse-grain site. So you don't have one back map structure, but actually an ensemble of back map structures.
It was really quickly flashed by, but I saw a really interesting slide about the hopping mechanism of going from between layers, and it looked like you were suggesting a sort of hopping mechanism whereby a molecule steps out of a layer, goes in between, and then goes to the other, which was something I think Dan Frankel looked at years and years ago, and they sort of calculated the free energy change for that mechanism. For it was either for hard ellipsoids or hard spherocylinders, and they found that mechanism wasn't true for their things. But for your system, you're saying that is the mechanism as opposed to moving directly between the layers.
If you believe the atomistic simulations to be true, that's the mechanism. That's what the atomistic simulations show. So we can see in the atomistic simulation a molecule threading out of the course of the smectic layer. It's hovering around in interlayer space and then threading back in either into the layer it was coming from or the next layer. We can observe that in the atomistic system rarely. So in the sense of happening,
I mean, usually you wouldn't see an interlayer space. Usually you wouldn't expect to see an interlayer space in an atomistic model.
Well,
I mean, the chains are all sort of melted normally, and there's nothing.
I mean, for that particular atomistic model, for that particular smectic system, I mean, there isn't enormous interlayer space, so it's not like there is lots of free space, but the molecules do go there, they thread there, and then they thread into the next layer. That's what we see in the atomistic. So basically, this is what this here is showing. So here, these blue arrows are indicating three smectic layers. It starts out here, threading into the interlayer space, threading into the next layer, and actually threading into the next interlayer space and coming back to that original layer. And this mechanism is exactly identical between the coarse grained and the atomistic simulation. And you can see that in the dynamics it materializes. This here is the Van Hove function, so basically the distribution of displacements. So for normal diffusive processes, that is Gaussian, and for this hopping, it has basically, it looks like this. And if you look at a longer time scale, so this is a question of time, then it starts looking like this. So basically, yeah.
Maybe directly to that, I think this might be a situation where details matter, even for these kind of systems, because Dan looked, as far as I remember, looked at hard ellipsoids or a model like this, and then these molecules are very flexible, and for instance, in plane, if they lie in plane, they have much higher conformational freedom than in the columns. And when you take into account this with the fluffiness of the tails in the smectic layers, I'm not at all surprised that there are quite a few molecules which are located in between these layers.
Actually, there's very old X-ray work of smectic layers that have shown that the smectic distance is slightly larger than whatever you'd get if you just stretch out the molecules. I kind of, when I saw that, I thought, oh, well, this might be an explanation. A little bit more than just the fluffiness of the molecules.
That might actually also be a good justification for doing that kind of rather elaborate structure-based coarse graining for such a system, because actually what we found to be most difficult to get right is the coarse grained model to reproduce the atomistic layer spacing. So basically, if you run it at NVT, it would be the anisotropic pressure scaling, pressure tensor. If you look at NPT, it would be the box dimensions. To get that right out of a structure-based model, that was extremely painful. I mean, that was how this all has started. I mean, he's laughing. It was painful. So, and if that is important, that actually is a point in case to do it in such a way. I mean, a bit less generic in that case.
You showed when you go from the isotropic to the smectic transition, then the molecules don't necessarily again nicely line up with the box, and that I understand that might happen. But unless I get my geometry wrong in my head, once you do a different angle, there must be some sort of commensurability conditions, like what kind of angles you can form, and as a consequence, the layer space you get is not necessarily the same that you had before. So the area per lipid might change again a little bit, thus again affecting the order. So when you compare the things that that came out after the thing spontaneously formed a layer, you might be overly critical to yourself by comparing, because actually even the atomistic simulation would have gotten different values at that point.
Yeah, that we are aware of. So, I mean, that's why I was saying that we are actually happy with the structural agreement that we got. I mean, it's not spot on. Just going back, it's always here. This one, we were, I mean, it's not spot on, the layer spacing. It's just reasonable. And the way to get out of that trap is basically to use the coarse grained model to actually generate much bigger systems than you could actually ever get with the atomistic model, and use that to more thoroughly explore those aspects of increasing the system size. But these are essentially finite size artifacts. I mean, we can go with this coarse grained system, we can go now to sizes where we even can have small domains. I mean, not really like big domains, but we can have half of our system ordered, half of our system disordered, and these kind of things, which you could never do with the atomistic model that we've originally started out with. And this is very relevant for the system that is partly cis, because that partly phase separates into an enriched phase, which is disordered, that has the cis molecules, and a purely all trans phase, and they phase separate. And for that, you need system sizes where you can actually do that. So atomistically, that wouldn't be what you want to do.
I have a question. Maybe a philosophical question.
Oh.
So maybe not only to you, but to all people talking about transferability. Transferability, or making transferable models, is it art or science?
That is a good, interesting question. the way I have pictured it here, it's actually more art than science. So I have deliberately, I think the way, let's put it like this, the way Will has thought about transferability, it's science. The way I have showed it, it's probably more like, you look how transferable your model is. I mean, not that I'm always that pragmatic, but if you go to these liquid crystalline systems, it's basically, at some point, you reach a level of complexity where it's, as you're suggesting, you hope that you can rationalize, maybe in hindsight, why your model was transferable. And then that's already something. I mean, you can understand later why it was maybe transferable. For example, in the case of this, taking the reference state point that has residual nematic order, that can you can rationalize the transferability if you look at the old liquid state theories that look at the structure fluctuations, for example, in supercooled phases close to a phase transition. Yeah. That would be a rationalization of the transferability, maybe even in hindsight.
Okay. If no other questions, let's thank Christina once again.
Yeah.
And we reconvene in 30 minutes at 4:00.